There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the beer we got? I mean, the beer we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
All right, away we go. FM Talk 106.5, Midday Mobile. Glad to have you here. A couple hours of live local talk and the phone and text hotline, 343-0106. Of course, you're going to need it this hour because it's Ask the Sheriff. It's that time every month when Mobile County Sheriff Sam Cochran joins us in studio, takes your questions. You've got questions for law enforcement. You got questions for the sheriff. He's here, and we can take those throughout the hour. Coming up in hour number two, Dr. Scott Chavers from Mobile County Health Department joins us for an update on vaccines. We're going to ask the questions about the J&J vaccine and your questions as well. You can get those sent in to our text line or on the phone. And at 1:30, Representative Shane Stringer joining us as well. All straight ahead today. But without further ado, Mobile County Sheriff Sam Cochran, good afternoon.
Hey, Sean. Glad to be here.
Good to have you back. Gosh, you know, I was just unloading on you there during the news break, all the questions I had for you. Start off, and then we'll come back and bring it back home here. But I got to ask you, as you know, person with, I'm not going to say how many decades, but many decades in law enforcement, to get your reaction to the story out of Minnesota and the draw. And I don't know. I'm this isn't rhetorical. I'm asking the drawing a handgun versus a taser, taser versus a handgun. That feel of that on your belt.
Well, generally, I mean, the way you wear it, mostly a taser is where you put it on your left side if you're right-handed. It's a cross draw,
okay.
And if your weapon is always going to be on your right hand, if you're right-handed, it's right there. So I don't know how you would confuse the two, but it's probably either a training issue or just a lack of experience being in the field and going through those motions. Now, I know that they said the lady officer had 25 years, I think, veteran.
That's what somebody said yesterday. Yeah.
You wouldn't expect that out of somebody like that, but one of my former training officers this morning told me, you know, that the older people get, more years, sometimes they become a little more complacent rather than the younger officers that practice and do things. But I suspect that before it's over, we're going to find out that she's maybe not been in the field for a long time, and maybe, I don't know what circumstances put her in this situation, but just such a terrible tragedy. But we see these mistakes rarely, but they do occur in where mistakes are made, and this is what you'd call it's an accident.
Yeah.
And it's not murder, nothing like that. It's a complete accident.
Yeah, and that's a good conversation to have in this, because obviously somebody's dead. We've got the issue here. There's the political issue that runs away with this and immediately go back to, you know, we're looting and rioting.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just like people are just waiting. Oh, it's shift change. Time for me to go
looting.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
and rioting out there. But it's this self-fulfilling prophecy you've talked about for years with us. What I worry about is every time something like this happens, it's got to be tough up there already to get officers into the force. But this happens. They're looking at this and the reaction. And then you end up not getting more people in, or you have people leave and not get replaced.
Right, so now you get more and more turnover. Less people stay in the business, so you get less experienced people. And I think I heard you on your show yesterday saying it contributes to the problem. When you have a young force, you lose your institutional knowledge, and you just have this constant turnover. So your supervisors are younger, inexperienced. Your administrators maybe are younger and inexperienced, and the front line are inexperienced. And you know, going through a situation like that, the more those situations go through, the better you are at the next one. Because sometimes you don't know how an officer, and that's what we deal with all the time, there's no job like law enforcement. Until you put them in that situation, you don't know how they're going to operate under stress.
Right.
Now, you know, an engineer goes in engineering school, and you can test him. He knows how to do the schematics and how to do that. But, you know, you can put an officer through a school, and he can answer the right questions. But until you put him out there under the stresses of the real life situation, you don't know. And sometimes you
there's
don't
no
get
way
second
to,
chances.
There's no way to real world test that other than the real world.
Until you put the real world upon them.
And I know y'all have, you know, the physical training as you're doing on the range and shoot and no shoot and those kind of things. But that also still doesn't have that huge dump of stress hormone in your body when that's going on.
That's exactly right. Of course, we're creating new ways of trying to create that stress in training where, you know, we'll do some role playing where we'll have an officer play the bad guy and be screaming in your face and filming you and why'd you stop me? Why you pulling me up? Why you this? Why you messing with me? Cause I'm this or I'm that, you know, and get them used to that because that's how some people confront them. And let me say without unequivocal, what a bozo that guy was that pepper sprayed the lieutenant in the Army. I mean, my
Let's
gosh, what a
story.
I just have to tell him, he's just a complete idiot and he's a disgrace to law enforcement. Even the way he was holding his gun, he's holding his gun sideways. That's a gangster thing. I mean, did he learn to police by watching gangster shows or what? I'm just so sorry for that lieutenant in the Army to be treated that way, but I assure you, that's not how 99% of police officers are. But we, again, now the lieutenant, in all his right, was saying, why'd you stop me, this and that.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something that's new that you get questioned a lot of times and challenged. And he said, get out of the car. Why am I getting out of the car? Do you have a warrant for my arrest? You know, so this officer may have been very inexperienced, or you could tell that he was scared and he was out of his environment and just overreacted and did some stupid stuff. He's since been fired. And, of course, now I don't know about the second officer, you know, because he looked like the junior officer, and that's what's so bad it impacts other officers that may not would have done anything wrong, but they're just caught up in it because of the senior officer. Now, we do train our officers now. We've done this for the last 2 or 3 years, that you have a duty to respond if you have a fellow officer doing something wrong. You're under directives now to intervene and stop that officer from making bad mistakes or doing bad things. Used to, that didn't
exist. Even if that's your senior.
That's right. Exactly. If you don't intervene, and it's common knowledge or prove that you know what this officer is doing is wrong, even though, as you're saying, you've got to intervene and try to stop it from happening.
So that is policy.
That is policy.
It's interesting. I mean, because, you know, people will often say, well, I was the new person there. I didn't, you know.
Yeah. You're like, hey, I'm just, yeah, exactly. I was the underling, and he was in charge. So what could I do? Well, now you're given the authority by directive to intervene and stop it.
That's interesting, and that's I don't know if that has a, I think it has a self-regulating effect, right? And knowing that somebody's, you know, that's there, that's part of your force, that's a teammate there, but is going to be watching that you're doing
it correctly. That's right. I mean, we understand that, given the human nature of our job, that from time to time somebody is going to perhaps lose their cool.
Mm-hmm.
And they've got to be held in check by their fellow officer. I mean, it may save their career.
You know, in those situations, the resisting arrest, and I know there's a varying level of resisting arrest. Like we talk about the story of somebody getting pepper sprayed. You have the right to ask, you know, why was I pulled over?
Mm-hmm.
You know, why do I have to get out? From that level to the person hauls butt, flees, runs.
Yeah.
So how often, and I know there's probably maybe not stats, maybe they're national, maybe they're local, does that happen? Is it one out of some level of resisting, let's say a higher level, somebody who refuses to comply or runs or drives off or something like that? Is that 1 in 10? Is that 1 in 100? Is that 1 in 250?
The resisting arrest, the physical resisting arrest is pretty common. Pretty common, yeah. I don't know that I'd put it in, how many numbers I could put it in, but there are many people. I mean, when you start to put the cuffs on, they know where you're headed. You're headed to the jail once the cuffs come on you, and that's, if they're going to make a break, that's when it happens. And in this particular case with the taser, you can see the video where the officers were getting ready to handcuff this guy, I think, and all of a sudden, right at the last second, he broke and ran. And
so it won't always be a resist. The car chase, the foot chase, it sometimes comes even after there's been interaction from the officer too.
Yeah, they may comply all the way up to the very last minute, and then they realize, what I've been saying wasn't acceptable to this officer. He's going to take me in anyhow, and boom, that's when the physical arrest or the break and run and stuff like that happens. And
fairly common.
Yeah, fairly common. Absolutely.
Has that changed over time, or has that been pretty steady?
I would say it's fairly steady. It may have increased a little bit more in the last few years, but it's always been a certain level of resistance.
Okay. So on that, how you deal with it. That's the next thing, right? In training is, okay, there's this resistance. What's the most efficient?
Well, you know, and we're learning, and currently the current study of those issues right now, we're learning that many foot pursuits end badly. And there are some agencies that are starting to say you do not do a foot pursuit unless it's of a certain level, because so many times it can start off as being a misdemeanor arrest, a foot pursuit, and then the person's running, they get into the woods, they get into a struggle, the person starts fighting, struggling over the officer's gun, the officer gets the gun and shoots and kills the suspect. And you say, well, this all started over a person that was pulled over for speeding, thought he had a warrant on him or did have a warrant on him, and the officer's running a check. He decides, I've got to get out of here, breaks and run, the officer chases him, and it may be all over a misdemeanor warrant. So some departments, few, but a lot more considering restricting foot pursuits.
Is that driven, the resist or the break and run, by people with, like, if you want to go back and look through a catalog of that, is it people with warrants on them?
Yeah. Almost all of these situations almost end badly, almost all of them end badly. The first harmful event, though, is that the defendant or the suspect resisted arrest. Almost every one of them that way. I mean, look at the high-profile cases, the Floyd case, the Freddie Brown case, all those cases, what'd they start with? Resisting. And the case in Louisiana where the guy shot the guy, resisting. And then he went to the ground. It looked like he was pulling that gun, and he had a gun. He was pulling it, and they shot him right there. It looked awful, but the guy was pulling a gun on him.
If you look at the stats, what drives the resist, break, and run, is it people with warrants on them, or does it
– Yes.
Is it – could it be – yes.
Yes, definitely. They have warrants, and they know if they are put into custody, it's going to be determined that, hey, they have outstanding warrants on them.
So you could almost go back. That's the formula. If somebody with a warrant on them is pulled over, mm-hmm. now our chances of that becoming a resist go
way up.
Way up. All right. Coming right back, I got a lot of questions coming in on the text line. You can get it on the phone line as well. Your questions for Mobile County Sheriff Sam Cochran. It's Ask the Sheriff right here on Midday Mobile.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Welcome back. FM Talk 106.5. Midday Mobile. Glad to have you along, and good to have Mobile County Sheriff Sam Cochran in studio for Ask the Sheriff. And we're going to do that right now on the text line and the phone line at 343-0106, 343-0106. All right, Tim is first up on the text line, Sheriff. He said, I'd like to know if the sheriff will get some of that money if they decide to go to this lifetime pistol permit, and what are his thoughts for or against the bill?
I believe the way the bill's written, the money that comes from the lifetime permit is split 80-20 between the sheriff and 20% to the state for them to produce a prohibited firearms person's list. Whether or not
that's what it would go to fund. Okay.
Yeah, somebody would go to fund that. Whether I was for it, no, I was not for it. I think things were perfectly well just the way they were. They're $20 a year, buy up to a five-year permit. That way we keep checking people over time, and that fee has not increased since 1984 in Mobile County. And for that $20, of course, $20 goes to the sheriff's office, and we use that funding for education and equipment and training of officers. And I never hear people complain about it, period. But
you didn't set that
constitutional
number.
I don't set it. It's set by state legislature.
Okay. Yeah, keep going. I just want to make sure people.
You know, people are pushing real hard for this constitutional carry where there's no permits and all of that. And even though I would like to think I'm a staunch Republican conservative, I just believe it's worth $20 to have a background check done on somebody before they carry a gun concealed about our city.
Because – and that's one of the questions. I have some back and forth in my mind over this.
Yeah.
I think a pretty solid Second Amendment 2A guy. Mm-hmm. And people say, well, that's limiting my right to carry, but they can open carry.
Right.
You know, I got my own opinion, but so you're not restricted from carry. You're restricted not from having the firearm or carrying the firearm, but carrying it concealed.
That's correct. And that's what it
that's the difference.
That's right. And then it allows you to carry it into other states that have reciprocal agreements. Of course, there are a number of states. Tennessee just recently went to constitutional carry, as they call it, or open, or no restrictions on permits, that you just carry it without a background check. And so there would be a lot of people that don't even realize that perhaps they're prohibited from carrying a firearm if they've been, a lot of people don't realize if they've been convicted of a domestic violence misdemeanor offense, they're prohibited from even possessing a firearm.
Not just
a lot of people don't realize that.
Not just conceal any firearm.
Yeah, any firearm. And they don't realize that until they come in and apply for a pistol permit, and they say, whoa, you can't, we can't issue you a permit. You can't even carry a pistol.
Jordan asks here, what position would a deputy take if someone with a concealed carry permit was stopped and had one of the so-called ghost guns?
Nothing, because the ghost gun right now is not prohibited. And if the person has a concealed carry, as good chances are that the officer will not even know they have that concealed carry. And if there's something that further in that stop brings about the need for the person to tell the officer they have a pistol with, you know, a gun with him, or what have you.
Well, that's and that's one thing that you and I have talked about several times. People say, well, the pistol registration, it's not. It is for the person, not for the firearm, not for the handgun.
Right. That pistol concealed carry permit, you could carry a variety of 50 different pistols concealed any time, like a Sean Sullivan guy.
Right. Yeah. Not me. I don't even know how those things work. Let's go to Milton. He's in Theodore. Hey, Milton, you're on with Sheriff Cochran.
Hey, man. Yes, sir. And Sheriff, we really appreciate what you and your officers do for us. It's quite a blessing to have you guys in our area, and thank you very much.
Thank you.
Yes, sir. Well, look, I've got a friend of mine that's it's in his 70s, known him for about 40 years, and he has a young, retarded boy that's 30 years old now,
mm-hmm.
and he just can't control anymore, and he has a mind of a five-year-old. And a couple of times he's gotten out, and you guys have interacted with him. For example, he was in front of a Walmart asking people to buy him a plastic sword and a wrestling belt thing. This kid's 30 years old.
Mm-hmm.
There's nothing he can do to keep up with this kid. I mean, he's tried to get him in different homes and all, but I mean, inevitably this kid wouldn't hurt a flea,
mm-hmm.
but somehow or another, he's going to wind up in trouble, and he can't, and my bud just can't seem to find him and his family are just too old to take care of him anymore. And it just seems like there ought to be somewhere that, you know, somebody like this could be taken into before he gets in trouble and winds up in the system. And I got that question for you, and I guess I'll hang up and listen to you, and I really appreciate you, sir.
Thank you. What a difficult problem that is. The Department of Human Resources, with the social agency of the state, would be the agency that's best positioned to be able to provide resources and guidance on how to handle that. I know that there's some of these homes, of course, if he's only got the mind of a five-year-old, he probably can't live by himself, but, you know, we have some of these homes, group homes around Mobile, where people live sort of on their own, but they're, you know, overwatched by agencies, you know, but that's just a tough situation, and I really don't know how to answer it other than to direct him to the Department of Human Resources. And I suspect the family's already been in touch with them and just trying to work through it. But as this family gets older and older, the kid ultimately is going to become a ward of the state, and the state has to look out for that person.
Well, yeah, I'll say this for me, and I mentioned about a minute here before the break, but mm-hmm. starting 10, 12 years ago, the state didn't do so much for the people that needed help in mm-hmm. the state of Alabama. They kicked a lot of that out.
Right.
And that's landed on the doorstep of law enforcement. I know that.
Yeah, and of course, we face it all the time, and of course, we continuously train for that, you know, with the different people with mental health issues and stuff such as that, and you know, you've got a huge increase of so many kids have, is it Asperger's or something like that?
Asperger's, Down syndrome.
So we train, like if you respond to a shooting at a school or something, you know, we've trained for that some kids in a class, because they mainstream them, that you go in a classroom, like telling everybody, put your hands up or something like that. Some of these kids may not even know what you're talking about. And so we've got to train our people, be aware that we have these kids being mainstreamed in that classroom.
Coming right back, more with Sheriff Sam Cochran. Your chance to ask the sheriff at 343-0106.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, welcome back. Remember, FMTalk1065.com. That's the website, right? Yeah, you got the website there where you can stream the station, check out podcast a la carte style, online opinion poll questions, show schedules, weekend show schedules, top stories of the day, three big things that you hear Dan and Dalton talk about. You can go read those stories as well. They're all over at fmtalk1065.com. And then, of course, the very fantastic Facebook page and the mediocre Twitter feed and the pretty good Instagram feed. Check them all out. All right, continue our conversation with Mobile County Sheriff Sam Cochran. Your chance to ask the sheriff. Ben says, do y'all think that there is a mentality that has people thinking they can resist officers because they feel they'll get away with more because police are too nervous to act?
I certainly believe that, yes. I think that's developed in the last few years, and I think you're seeing less aggressive policing as a result of that. And in those cities where they've really either defunded or attacking the police, so to speak, you see that, and you've seen the murder rate in the robbery and assault rates go sky high in those cities.
And what about increasing rates now? It's not. It's changed here. It's up. It's not like we're looking at in some of these cities where they defunded the police. Mm-hmm. I don't know the county overall, but with city limits, we've seen, I think we're five murders over where we were at this time last year.
Mm-hmm. We're certainly seeing a marked increase in gun violence in the city. We've not seen it yet in the county, but we're fearful that it's going to push out into the county, and we're working very closely and cooperatively with the City of Mobile Police Department. But thankfully,
when you say push out, like that the gun violence itself will move?
Yeah, it will.
Or will it pop up in a news? Seeing like, would it be gun violence that, for example, if you're cracking down on gun violence, which I don't know how you, but you're cracking down on crime in one area in the city, does it move outside the city limits, or is it organically starting somewhere else?
No, you can push crime into certain areas where the crime's occurring. If you aggressively police in that area, you're going to do two things. You're going to stop it from happening there, but you're going to push it into another area. And so a lot of the gun crimes we're seeing today are between drug gangs and just gangs in general, and a lot of them are the same old ones. It's not that many. I mean, it's just a certain amount of people, but they're just constantly in these running gun battles, and we're seeing more of these truly running gun battles where one group finds out where another group is, they go to shoot them and kill them, and
not giving a care in the world to who else.
Tell you, they'll make up some story that they were just walking down the street and got shot or something, and mm-hmm. then we'll tie it back to a actual shooting that we were made aware of. You know, I think you saw the big shootout on Bel Air Boulevard.
Yeah, I did.
A couple of weeks ago. I mean, that was a heck of a shootout. And that was, you know, obviously two facets of people shooting at each other, driving down the road. And I think a couple of them were shot, but they won't give any statements to law enforcement. So that means if they get out, they're going to.
So it just resumes.
They're going to go back and try to get vengeance on the other. Of course, I think one of them may be paralyzed from the chest down that got shot. So he won't be doing any more shooting, probably. Of course, he may not be able to run either, and they may come and finish him off.
Looking at the text line here, Sly asks, please ask the sheriff about the procedure when a car is driving to a lit area rather than pulling over immediately, something we've talked about before.
Yeah, if an officer's pulling you over and you feel uncomfortable or for some reason you're not absolutely certain it's a law enforcement officer or something, and usually it should be always a marked car, but there are some circumstances unmarked, it's reasonable to you know, slow down, put your flashes on, and drive to a lit area.
That's Ken says, it seems like the big issue is, do you have to do anything an officer tells you, even if you have done nothing wrong?
Well, you probably should, because many times you may have done something wrong and you don't realize you've done something wrong, and the officer knows you've done something wrong, or at least the officer thinks you've done something wrong, and the best response is to abide by the lawful orders of the officer. And if the officer has done you wrong or whatever, then to follow up with a complaint to the internal affairs of that department. Best settled not in the streets in the middle of the night, but best settled with an investigation by the internal affairs.
I think we've talked about that in the past. I just, my parents, you know, just went stuck. I'm 48 now, and I remember the conversation when I think I got my learner's permit before I even got my driver's license. And they sat me down and said, if you're done wrong, we'll deal with it afterwards.
That's right.
Yeah, they basically said you could be completely wrong. They said, shut up, do what you're told, and we'll come down there. We'll deal with it afterwards.
That's right. Remember, that officer's armed with a book with hundreds, if not thousands, of violations, ordinances, codes, statutes, and all like that, and he knows them inside out, and you probably don't. And if you aggravate him and make him mad, he's going to go to his playbook.
So we'll go to the phones here, and let's go to Terry in Mobile. You're on with Sheriff Cochran.
Hey, Sheriff, how you doing?
Great, thank you.
I got a question for you. Like, I know here in Alabama, if you get like a domestic violence, you can't carry a weapon.
That's correct.
But like out in California, they have a law that after 10 years, if you don't get any more trouble, you can get your pistol permit. How come Alabama don't have nothing like that in place? I mean, because ultimately, good people do make mistakes.
I agree with you. Ultimately, people do make mistakes. But, understand that's a federal law that prohibits you from possessing a firearm. So the only way if that actually, and I'm not disputing you, if that occurs in California, there must be something in California that gives a pardon and restore full civil rights to the individual, and then that way it takes it off your record as a felon. And and that's the only way I know that would work.
Yes, sir.
And on that same point, a lot of people that have convictions for a felony, they can request a pardon from the State Department of Pardons and Parole. Even if it's a federal conviction, you can still get your civil rights restored by the state. It's the states control your civil rights and your voting rights, not the federal government. And then the federal government does that. So that's just for those people that might have a federal conviction. But, I believe people can redeem themselves.
Okay. All right. Thank you, sir.
Hey, yes, sir.
Thank you, Terry. That is something that you and I have also talked about for a long time. And I don't know if I was strong one way, but I sure have turned strong the other way. If somebody's served their debt to society, and we're getting them back out. We believe now. I'm not talking about early parole. I'm talking about somebody served their time, done this. I want to give them every tool to be a citizen again.
Yeah.
Full speed. I want to make sure that they can find a place to work and vote, too. This idea that, it used to be, well, of course, they've given that up for life. The older I get, I think that it's better to put people back in as close to the full citizen as they were before they committed the crime.
Yeah, because they've gone through an awful lot. I mean, if they've served a lot of years in prison or something, they probably served a lot of years after prison on parole or something like that, or either a lot of years on probation. So you do have a track record to look at, but at the same time, be mindful the best predictor of future behavior is past behavior. And so usually somebody gets in trouble, they don't go long without getting in trouble again and again and again.
Yeah, and I know you see it. I'm just thinking, though, for the exception, the person that gets out, if we can, after a period of time, look to restore voting rights, look to restore these rights. I want them to be engaged in society, not outside society, where the temptation of doing wrong again would be greater.
That's sure, absolutely.
But if you get a job and a place to stay and people you care about, and you got older, you've told me the stats as they get older, you're less likely to commit crime.
That's correct.
Then you have a better chance of being a good part of society.
Here's what contributes to that. Somebody that's served time in the penitentiary or something many years ago, that's not something they run around bragging about. Say, hey, Sean, let me tell you, man, I'd serve time.
Right.
No. Or, if an employer asks, if an employer don't ask, you're not going to tell. But there are many people that have turned their lives around.
Look at it. A lot of text here. This one. All right, so Fred asks, in the learning process on how to deal with and train for those that may resist or flee, are there discussions or proven viable ways, one that may pose a threat can be determined before it happens, or do you just assume it's going to happen every time and be thankful when it doesn't?
Probably this last sentence is most accurate. You have to be trained and planned for the fact that they may resist, so that you are capable of responding to that resistance. And then you're right, you're thankful that they didn't resist. But you have to expect it out of every single traffic stop. You don't know if it's an armed robber that just committed a robbery that hadn't come out yet around the corner, or they may have just shot and killed somebody, or just a traveling felon from across the country. Remember, how many people commit crimes and the first thing they do is flee the town.
Somewhere else, yeah.
And so that's why we intercept a lot of criminals traveling through our community.
Dale says, when you're pulled over, what kind of info does the officer get onto his computer beyond what's on the tag registration? Is it likely driver, insurance, existence, status? What are they looking at?
Well, that's continuously changing and improving. Generally, they're going to get the tag registration, the owner of the car. Sometimes it can tell you maybe if there's a warrant for the person that's the registered owner of the car. Of course, it doesn't know anything about who else may be in there, and it gives you that information. Beyond that, you get the person's driver's license and run a check, and then you'll find more information out. Like, for instance, the Sheriff's Association started a database last year. It's not completed across the state, but if you run a check on a person or thing, it will show whether or not they have a concealed carry permit, you know, just to tell you ahead of time that they may be armed. We also tap into our probate court pickups, where if we pick somebody up to take them for hearing in probate court, if we run a check on them in Mobile County, we'll know that we've dealt with them for commitment.
It'll let you know that.
Sure.
We come back. I got a bunch more questions coming in here, and it's your chance to ask the sheriff, Mobile County Sheriff Sam Cochran, our guest right here on FM Talk.
You're listening to Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Right, so many questions coming in on the text line. We're speed rounding this with Mobile County Sheriff Sam Cochran, our guest. All right. Bob says, what is the minimum requirement that you must give information-wise to the officer or deputy? Is driver's license, proof of registration, and can you then remain silent from that point forward, respectively?
Yeah, you could. That's an accurate interpretation of the law that the officer, you know, unless there's something else that's transpiring, the officer has a right for further inquiry. If you, you know, appear to have committed a crime or something like that, then the officer has a right to ask you to step out of the vehicle, things of that nature. But generally, if it's just a traffic stop, just give them your driver's license and your proof of insurance and registration.
Right. Question here. Who needs contacted if an abandoned house might be a place for homeless or possible drug use?
I'd say contact the property owner first. And if that doesn't work out, if you see suspicious activity, if it's in the county, then contact us when the suspicious activity is occurring, and we'll send a deputy out to investigate.
All right. Supermom says, what if somebody's been Baker acted? Does that negate their ability to get a pistol permit?
You say Baker acted.
Act. Yeah.
I'm not sure.
I'm not sure what it is. I know it's something. Is it maybe somebody's been. I'm guessing here. I thought it was something to do with if you were sent to a facility. Not your own but you know what? I'm not going to say that because I don't know that that's true either.
If that's a commitment, like if you've been committed to a mental
institution.
True, so.
Hey, can you help us, Supermom, tell us on that? When you get pulled over, why does the officer touch his thumb on the rear driver's tail light when he approaches the car?
He's really not touching the tail light. What he's doing is touching the trunk to make sure the trunk lid is not open. Many years ago, there were some occasions where people, bad guys or something, would hide in the trunk and the officer walk by and then they jump out of the trunk and open fire. I mean, I won't say it's a myth, but it's, you know, it's something that got created and that's just taught in all kinds of officer survival schools to this day.
All right. So Phil says the reason cops don't know and are on the edge are examples like the cops killed in New Mexico who had the drop on the officer at the traffic stop, didn't have a chance.
Yeah, I mean, officers have to prepare for the unexpected, and every single minor traffic stop can turn into a deadly encounter because you don't know who you're stopping.
Supermom,
or what crime that may have just occurred.
Supermom came back, involuntary commitment.
Okay, if you've been committed to an involuntary commitment, that restricts you from being able to possess a firearm.
Okay, but if you get pardoned. But that wouldn't be something you get pardoned for.
No, that's not something to be pardoned for. So that's a good question. And the laws.
Is there a way to prove your competence going forward? You know, because somebody who served their time in prison could apply to the governor's office, right, to have a pardon and then be able to get
rights to the Board of Pardons and Parole.
Yeah.
You know, it's unfortunately they took the discretion away from the sheriffs. But years ago, when I still had the discretion to issue pistol permits, if somebody had been diagnosed with some kind of mental illness, bipolar, this or that, I would say, look, if you can get your doctor to write a letter that you've been under treatment for several years and there's been no episodes of this or that, I'll issue a permit. And I used to, but now it's different.
Explain that, because people that have not followed us talking about this for years, and when the law changed, explain exactly what you just said.
For several years, and every year now in the legislature, there are bills that the sheriffs have to fight against that are trying to just do away with all restrictions on concealed carry permits, just do away with it. So we've gradually lost.
May issue, right?
Yeah, may issue. That's right.
But now you're
shall issue.
And that means what?
Unless you're a convicted felon or convicted of domestic violence, or we can prove you're a known drunkard or prove that you're a known drug addict, we have to issue the permit. I mean, you could have a number of misdemeanor convictions for disorderly fighting and all like this, but we still have to give you the permit, even if we just suspect bad things are going
to
come.
You used to be able to offer your discretion on that.
That's correct.
Okay.
Now I can't. And
let's go to Robert in Orange Beach. You're on with Sheriff Cochran.
Yes, sir. I just wanted to make a comment, and I can't understand why the national news media doesn't bring this up over and over again. If I follow the officer's directions when I get stopped, he's never going to shoot me or beat me up or throw me on the ground, because I'm going to do what he says. And all of these occurrences are because people don't respect the police and they don't submit to the police, and probably it's because they're guilty. And that's all I had to say.
Probably no truer words have been spoken, and we often in our business refer to it, the first harmful event is that crime that they committed or the resistance that they made, and all such as that.
Right, but there is
If there is a bad officer that does something, it'll only take about one instance and he'll no longer be an officer.
Right.
You know, I often tell people, the citizens, you're our eyes and ears for us on bad officers. If I get a complaint from one person, and then I get the same complaint from another person on that same officer, and these two complainants have no relationship or something, well, this big old light bulb goes off in my head, and I say, hey, there's something to this, and that's how we need the people to bring it to our attention. Because an officer is not going to do a bad act in front of other officers or
right.
in front of a bunch of citizens.
Right. And this goes back to something we've mentioned, that people say, well, it doesn't matter. If I report them, it doesn't matter. It's just nothing's going to happen. But it does. And I've talked to you about this. I talked to former chief, now public safety director, Batiste, about this, and that it does. When things, the similar stories come in, that's y'all's job as top management to look at this and go, okay, there's an issue here.
Exactly. In our findings of complaint, sometimes we'll say the complaint is unsustained, which is not saying that it's unfounded, or it's not saying the officer's not guilty of it. It's unsustained. We don't have the evidence to prove that the officer did. But when you start getting more than one unsustained complaint for the same things, well, guess what? That's, you know, that you've got to start focusing. And truly, we are able to weed out bad officers a whole lot easier than what people think we are, because, you know, we use the polygraph examination, and if you're an employee, we can order you to take that. We can order you to take a drug test. You know, we can order you to produce your medical records. If you're taking some kind of controlled substances, you have to report to your supervisor. There's many, many ways that we are able to police our own, but we just have to have the assistance of the community sometimes to help us do that.
Well said. Remind folks, too, to get more information about what's going on with the sheriff's office, or, of course, maybe they want to see who's in jail. How do they go on your social media?
Download our app, the Sheriff's App, Team Sheriff, or go on our Facebook, like us on Facebook, follow us on the website. The app gives you access to who's in jail, who's wanted, what warrants, and our website will tell you who's in jail. You can look up, see if they're in jail, and find out if somebody has a warrant for them. If you got a next-door neighbor that's giving you problems, by all means, check, make sure they don't have a warrant, because we might could alleviate your problem. If they have a warrant, you let us know.
There you go. So y'all check it out. Sheriff, as always, I appreciate your time. Thanks
Thank
for
you,
being
Sean.
With us.
I appreciate your listeners. I learn as much or more from them than they from me.
And heck, we didn't, you know, I mean, there have been so many. If we didn't get to y'all's text this time, we're going to be, we'll save those over for next month and get those asked as well. All right, coming back next hour, it's your chance to ask some questions about the vaccine. Dr. Scott Chambers, Mobile County Health Department, will join us, get an update on what's going on with vaccination here in Mobile County, and then around the state, and the J&J vaccine, and how long this goes on. We're out of the mask mandate, but what does that all mean? We'll do that next, right here on Midday Mobile on FM Talk 106.5.